one of the newest areas of emphasis, and HBU is key in this, is the area of apologetics. Really teaching, helping our younger generation know how to contend for the faith in a culture and a society like we live in today is one of our biggest challenges. So our world of apologetics is becoming even more significant.
Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing programs to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
Dr. David Hartage is the executive director of the Baptist General Convention of Texas. Hartage earned a doctorate of ministry from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, a master's of divinity from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, and his bachelor's degree from Baylor University. He's a dynamic leader that leads the BGCT and thousands of churches across Texas. How many churches are there, BGCT?
It changes every day, every week, but it's a little over 5,300 churches.
5,300. That's a big responsibility.
Well, it is. And now you break that down a little bit, and it's, you know, we have about 1,100 that would be predominantly Hispanic.
Right.
A little over 800, between 800 and 900 that would be predominantly African American. Mm-hmm. Then we have about 350 to 400 that would be other cultures and ethnicities like Asian, African, Arabic. And then we have about 200 that we call Western heritage. They would be known as cowboy churches. Then the rest, the 3,000 or so, would be, you know, predominantly Anglo.
Yeah.
But we have more and more intentionally multicultural, multi-ethnic churches.
And the Baptist General Convention of Texas, we note, is really historically the largest donor to Houston Baptist University. So on behalf of the university, we obviously express our deep gratitude to the BGCT. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, on behalf of Texas Baptist, you're welcome. But I think, you know, from the time the convention began, one of the primary reasons the convention began was for education. And so, in addition to Houston Baptist, we have other Baptist entities, Baptist institutions all across Texas, and our people continue to believe in education and providing a Christian foundation, a biblically based education for students from Texas and beyond.
Give us let's talk first about David Hartage. I'd love to hear kind of the thumbnail sketch of your career.
Well, I was saved when I was 9. I'll start there. I wouldn't have a career.
Are you a Texan?
I am. I was born in Waco.
Okay.
When my father had returned from Korea and finished up his college at Baylor. He started at Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene, and Korea kind of interfered with that. And then he started out as a minister of music and then became a pastor. And so church has been my life.
Yeah.
And I'm not complaining about that. I have no regrets at all about that. But I was saved when I was 9. And then in a very similar spiritual experience, I felt called to the ministry when I was 10 years old. And by the time I was a teenager, we had moved out to West Texas, and I began preaching when I was 14. You know, not very well, I would say, probably. But the churches, the smaller country churches out in West Texas, were gracious and caring and gave me a chance, and I took advantage of that. And then in college, I continued to preach, and it ended up at Southwestern Seminary, years ago. And I started pastoring my first church when I was 24.
Wow.
Yeah. So I tell people, you know, when I started, it wasn't that I didn't know anything. I didn't even suspect anything. But it was a blessing, and I was a pastor for almost 24 years.
Wow. In Texas during the 24 years?
You know, mostly in Texas, but a little stint in Oklahoma, First Baptist Church, Weatherford, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And loved it. Great church, great people. And But then my longest pastorate was First Baptist Sulphur Springs, Texas, mm-hmm. where I was there for just right at 14 years.
Wow. Yeah. Nice community.
Yeah, it's a great place. We raised our children there. They started school and finished school there. And so that was, not every pastor has that experience, but we were blessed to be able to, our children go through school all in the same place.
And your wife, tell me about her.
Kathleen, we met at college, and so she's from Cleburne, Texas, just mm-hmm. south of Fort Worth, and four generations right there in Cleburne, Johnson County. So she had always said she would never, didn't or never, but certainly didn't have aspirations to marry a coach or a preacher, because their lives were, you know, too, you know, fishbowl kind of, and too mobile, but she married a preacher who loves sports. And so that's been our life. She just retired when I took this position with the convention back in 2012. She'd been a public school teacher for close to 30 years.
Wow.
So her life is public school education, and really that was a calling and a ministry for her, and loved it, loved the classroom in particular. Some of the other things weren't quite as enjoyable, but that goes with any job or work, I suppose. But in the classroom, she could really shine as a teacher.
The transition to denominational work.
Right.
Tell me how that came about in your life. I mean, because BGCT is a monstrous association of churches.
Well, it is. I always say I had no expectations or aspirations to ever be in this position. I was perfectly happy in the local church, and I could go back to the local church someday, and that wouldn't bother me, or I would have no hesitation to do that. Now, right now, I feel like this is where I'm supposed to be, and I'll continue that course. But I just received a call one day. So I transitioned out of the pastorate into a director of missions of a local association.
Sure.
And then at Truett Seminary at Baylor, I worked for a little while as a fundraiser, which was how that all transpired is a completely unique story, something I never expected either. But then the phone rang one day, and the person on the other end was a friend of mine who was happened to be the chair of the search committee for this position as executive director of the Baptist General Convention of Texas, and said, "Would you consider talking to us?" And I said, "Well, I'll certainly pray about that." And over the course of about 8 or 10 months and 5 or 6 interviews, but what it really boiled down to get to your to answer your question. I look back at my career, which you can't really outline, but I had been in the church, and I had been in the association, and I had worked in the institution, and those are really the three things
sure.
that the convention does and relates to, and I had experience with all three.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think the Lord led them and led me all together to this place, but you know, in the background, in a practical sense, that's kind of how that transpired. So, February 1st, 2012 is when I started.
And when you have the title Executive Director of the Baptist General Convention of Texas, that's got to be a lot of hats. Tell us what that means.
Well, there's a lot of administration to it. I'm not sure that's my real gift, but I think I'm a people person. So when I equate administratively with relating to and managing people, I feel like that's something that I do well. Now, I wouldn't do it at all. I wouldn't do this at all if I couldn't engage the church and I couldn't preach.
Right.
I wouldn't really have much of an interest in that. But I preach in a different church somewhere in Texas every Sunday. But so generally, I help our executive leadership team and then our leadership team kind of oversee, manage, promote, expand the mission and ministry work, the cooperative mission and ministry work of 5,300 churches. And that's mostly in Texas, but not limited to Texas.
So that's a massive number of churches. So what kind of staff is involved in you're in Dallas, based
right.
in Dallas.
Well, we have about 260 employees. And now the way that breaks down, About 100 of those, probably a little less, but around 100 of those would be in our main offices in Dallas. But we have an office in Waco where our Texas Baptist Historical Collection is. And we have an office in Austin where our Christian Life Commission is, and that would be our team that, in Austin they would call them lobbyists. We don't use that term. We think of them as advocates for causes that we believe are right and good and biblical. Then we have a team of people in San Antonio, and here in Houston we have a group of folks as well. But then, in addition to, people who lead each one of our primary ministry focuses, there's breaks down with supportive staff and then ministry assistants. But another part of our staffing that a lot of people don't think of is all around Texas, on all the college and university campuses, there are Baptist student ministries. And the directors of those Baptist student ministries are all BGCT employees.
And we have one here.
Yeah, Nathan Mahan, here at HBU. And so his assignment is to engage HBU campus with the gospel, but he's a BGCT employee. So he lives here, serves here, ministers here, works here, but he's one of our employees, and that's the way it is all over the state.
And how many fill that category?
Well, we have ministry. We have ministry on 115 or so campuses all over Texas, universities and colleges and junior colleges.
So they're not just Baptist colleges by any means?
No. Matter of fact, the largest ones would be probably Texas A&M, UT Austin. A number of those are full-time, some of those are part-time, and then there are a few volunteers, and then we have interns that we try to place in places to support all of that work. And hopefully those interns will kind of get a feel and a call for collegiate ministry, whether it be on the campus or in the church. Mm-hmm. But we have about 115 ministries going on college and university campuses all over Texas.
And then what are some of the other players?
Well, one of our big pieces is what we call our Great Commission team, and that's where we do evangelism and discipleship. So if you're the pastor of a church and you want to develop a quality, engaging youth ministry, then we have what I think is one of the premier youth ministry experts in the world, Jane Wilson, who does all of that. Matter of fact, I got an email this morning on my way down here beginning to promote an event we have every fall in Arlington called Conclave. Mm-hmm. And we bring youth ministers from all over Texas and beyond to really fine-tune their skills and talk about cutting-edge life and youth ministry work. So whether it be youth ministry, that's just an example. Children's ministry, adult ministry, all that in discipleship. And then we have evangelism, where we really try to help the churches know how to, in 2019 and beyond, share the gospel. And that covers a variety of ways. One of the newest areas of emphasis, and HBU is key in this, is the area of apologetics. Really teaching, helping our younger generation know how to contend for the faith in a culture and a society like we live in today is one of our biggest challenges. So our world of apologetics is becoming even more significant.
Indeed it is. You've got a lot of people. I mean, it's a tremendous responsibility you have.
Well, we do have a lot of folks, but they're gifted, they're called, they believe they're in the place where they're serving now because that's where God put them. And so, I don't really have to, I don't micromanage any
right,
of them.
Sure.
They are gifted and called and talented. So whether it's the Great Commission team or whether it's our missions team, and I could spend this whole time talking about what we do in missions, and it's exciting. I think some of it's really cutting edge, frankly. Then our Christian Life Commission in Austin, right now, during the midst of this particular legislative session, advocating, against the evils of human trafficking and promoting, and really we're the leaders, I think, in talking about how dangerous what we call predatory lending is mm-hmm. in society. So those kinds of things. And then you talk about, you know, we have a whole team that we call them connections, but we're helping churches and ministers connect. Mm-hmm. If a church is looking for a pastor, we try to help them. If a pastor's looking for a church, we try to help him. But in that, we have a whole counseling service with. Now we have counselors who are endorsed by BGCT, 250 of them all across the state. So if you are a pastor in some part of Texas and you need, it doesn't take long for most of us as pastors to, when someone comes in for counseling, that goes a little beyond our sure. area of expertise. We have a network where you can quickly refer to a quality Christian counselor. But within that counseling, for all of our pastors and church staff members and their families, we provide counseling for them. And last year, we had over 1,000 contacts from pastors, church staff members, and families of those. So that's good in that we had that service available to help them through trying times. Sad in that there were that many.
Sure.
But then there's one other, and that's the BSM. That's the Baptist Student Ministry. And that's a big part of what we do.
It's an amazing network. Let me ask you about Texas and trending in Texas.
Sure.
We know that people from New York are moving to Texas and people from California are coming to Texas.
Right.
And the Pulitzer, Lawrence Wright, just wrote a book called God Save Texas, where he gives all of these amazing statistics. Mm-hmm. 2050, a population of 50 million people in Texas.
Yeah.
How do you talk to us? I mean, you probably stay alert to the trends of the state.
Well, we certainly try to. So when you talk about people moving here, the words that we use, we talk about immigration from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about immigration from around the world, Houston is a perfect example of that. You know, Houston is the most culturally and ethnically diverse city in the United States. Now, that's probably news to a lot of people who
sure.
would think maybe it's Miami or New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, but the most culturally diverse city is Houston.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the number one housing market in the United States is Midland. Now, you know, it's just so people moving here from around the world, people migrating here from the other 49 states. You use California as an example. I think in the past 22 years, there have been well over, it's approaching about 4.5 million people have migrated from California to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's changing the culture, the climate, the everything of Texas. The way I say it is, the Texas into which I was born is not the Texas I live in today.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about trends and changing trends, it's not just cultures and ethnicities that create diversity. The religious climate of Texas is like it's never been before. One other trend that we have kept track of is what we call households. Now, depending on how you define household, but I'll give you just a couple of statistics. So back in 1970, now I can remember back that far, but 1970... a household that would be made up of a mother and a father and children at home.
A nuclear family.
A nuclear family. That would be about 42% of the households of Texas back in 1970. Now you fast forward to 2019, the percentage of households in Texas made up of that mother, that father, and those children at home, that's less than 23%. So.
That's staggering.
It is. But here's two statistics that the church just has to be aware of, and I'm not sure we're catching on. Developers are catching on, but I think the church may be a little behind. 25%, it's roughly 25% of the households of Texas would be like my wife and me.
Right.
We are married, no children at home. That is about a fourth of the households of Texas, somewhere in that neighborhood. And so, you know, as my generation, as we, this the, you know, the baby boomers, we age into retirement, you know, ministry to and with and for us is probably going to be different than what my parents, you know, expected. So that's one thing. But here's another one that I would just, almost beg the church to look at. It's approximate, but approximately 25% of the households of Texas are single adults living by themselves. So if you drive through a major metropolitan area of Texas, Houston, Austin, Dallas, San Antonio, Fort Worth, El Paso, the Rio Grande Valley. So you drive through a major metropolitan area and you wonder, why are all these apartment complexes being built? And they're everywhere. And one-fourth of the households of Texas are single adults living by themselves. Now, if you were to ask me, you didn't, but if you were, what's the weakest area of ministry to the church, in the church? Single adults.
Mm-hmm. No question. And the reality is that Anglo young people are having less children, waiting to get married until later ages.
Yeah.
And many not getting married.
That's exactly right.
We've had a culture shift. Now, the question I have for you is that, and my wife and I have been studying this for about 4 or 5 years on more of a national scale, not just Texas. Does the church understand, and that, this is a rather unfair question because we know the word church is very broad.
Right, right.
But do church leaders understand the culture shift that's happened?
You know, I'm not sure I'm the expert on that, so, you know, opinion here. I certainly believe the church wants to get that. I think the church is trying to get that, but I'm not sure the church is there yet.
And on behalf of pastors, we can certainly say there's not really a spare day or week or quarter to go study culture trends with the challenges that the average church faces and the realities of just doing church life. People have needs. People are being born. People are dying. You got to prepare a sermon. If it's worth anything, it's going to take a lot of time. It's a very complex challenge.
The work of the pastor is as challenging as it's ever been because the culture is more challenging than it's ever been. So my heart goes out to those pastors and to do all those things that you talk about. So the pastor will know, just intuitively, the pastor will know as he drives through his community or his city, there's so many people here we're not reaching. But then he gets drawn back into, I've got a funeral Saturday.
Sure. I've got a deacon's meeting.
And then there's this event that is happening in the community. I need to be there to represent our church.
Right.
So all these things are happening, so it's such a challenge. But, you know, society has changed. The church is trying to change and wants to adjust. I'll give you an example. I'm in a different church every Sunday. And so, not all, but many of them kind of have the same mindset, and it is, you know, we need to reach the families. We've got to reach the young families. And so my response to that is, yes, you do. I hope you reach every single one of them. And then when you do that, let's talk about that other 75% of the households of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And the two demographics you cited are half of Texas, empty nesters and single adults.
And then there's the nuclear family. And then there's that whole 25% that's anything and everything
right.
else.
Right.
Yeah.
The work of the denomination, in my opinion, is extremely important for a number of reasons. And I've learned this experientially. Mm-hmm. I don't just say it with rhetoric.
Right.
There are certain things that the local church needs to defer to the denomination to do. The work you're doing in Austin, it's a strategic work.
It is.
And to interface with legislators and senators, et cetera, and to do it properly and the right protocol, the right communication, you know, we can see a church's ministry get hijacked when a pastor takes that on almost as a quasi full-time thing, mm-hmm. whether intentionally or unintentionally. It's just one example.
Sure.
But the work of the denomination is strong in so many ways. And yet, a lot of young ministers don't really get the value of the denomination. Are we seeing a trend that there's too many guys that are starting churches kind of independent, isolated from the denomination, and they think that's a strength? And I get all the mm-hmm. excuses they do, but looking now, having been in the ministry like you for several decades, I think it provides a potential disguised weakness in longtime ministry.
So my response to that is, we do deal with every day almost proving our relevance. So my answer is going to be a little multifaceted here, and I'll get to it quickly. But we look at ourselves as we exist for two reasons: to help the church do what it does.
Right.
So whatever God leads your church to do, we want to help you if you need us. We're not going to impose ourselves on you ever. But if you need assistance, you need help, we are here. We have experts in every area of church life, a phone call away.
And more so in Texas, maybe, than a number of other states.
Well, I think that's true, which is why we now have a partnership with the Northwest Baptist Convention
sure.
and the Michigan Baptist
sure.
Convention. We're happy to partner and engage with those folks. But we also exist to help the local church do what it can't do. So I'll use the work of the Baptist Student Ministry.
Mm-hmm.
A church here in Houston can support the BSM here at HBU. Or maybe if they're over near Rice, they can support the BSM at Rice, or if they're near U of H. But we have ministers in all three of those.
Mm-hmm.
But 5,300 churches collectively can support a Baptist Student Ministry work on 115 campuses. A church cannot do that.
Exactly.
So, but you use the example of church starting, church planting. You branch out there on your own. You're kind of on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a support system behind you of 5,300 churches and church starting experts who've developed an effective and efficient church starting model and method, then I think you're well on your way to being successful. So the example we like to use is, and I think my statistics are pretty close, so people out there can check that. You know, all kinds of organizations and all kinds of groups all over the country plant churches. It's hard work. So the average church start success rate, I think, is under 40%.
Right.
But the Baptist General Convention of Texas church start success rate is over 83-84%. So it speaks to that, and by the way, a church start is considered successful if it's still going 5 years after it launched.
Sure.
So that, but when you've got a system behind you and you are properly resourced, you are adequately assessed at the very beginning. A lot of individuals think they want to be a church planter, but they may not have yet what it takes, or may never. It's hard work. But you're resourced and assessed properly, coached correctly along the way, held accountable. That's an important piece of that. And then behind that, there's just a system of support that's prayerful and knowledgeable. You start tying all those things together, and it's a cord that's really strong.
I want to touch on two things before we close.
Sure.
One is that if I go to Memorial Hermann or Houston Methodist for medical care,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to encounter a board-certified, educated doctor.
Right.
It is assumed the minute I enter the door. And unlike if I was going to maybe get medical care in Rio or São Paulo,
mm-hmm.
I may get a doctor that doesn't have the same qualifications. One of the concerns I have today And again, coming from my background, I started at Youth for Christ, where they said, don't go to school to put your fire out.
Yeah.
And effectively did all of my academic training later.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have too many men in the ministry that are not continuing their education by getting formal degrees, masters, doctorate, terminal degree, PhD? Is there something to be said that maybe some of our sermons are like skyscrapers? They're one story upon another, but that we're not catechizing the culture. And I go back to Prothero in Boston, who said that in his book, Religious Literacy, he said that the fathers of the Republic had in their congregations, or the clerics in the New England colonies had in their congregations the fathers of the Republic. But if you go back and examine their sermons, they were virtual doctrinal treaties. And those New England colony ministers, many who came from England, totally discipled the fathers of the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, talking about biblical literacy that we know, you know. People think the Beatitudes, Billy Graham said, blah, 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 blah. Is there something about continuing your education as a minister?
Well, as a convention, we would certainly encourage it. We can't require it.
Right.
But we strongly encourage it. So a phrase that I have come to use is, we are looking for ministers who are truly called and well-equipped.
Mm-hmm.
And so that well-equipping is that you've got a theological and doctrinal soundness to you, which we hope you get in and through your local church growing up, but hone that in a place, if you're able, that really fine-tunes that and deepens that and sharpens that. Now, one of our challenges is, and we had a meeting yesterday where we were talking about this, is how do we get theological education out to so many others because of distance, because of language, because of other challenges, whatever they may be, but how do we make sure that they are getting the equipping that they need? Technology is changing everything. And, you know, back in my day, the residential campus was it. I still think there's a place for that today, and would encourage people if they're able to pursue that. But our institutions are wanting to and are desperately trying to pursue theological education and get it, push it out to the people where they can get it, where it's accessible and affordable. But it's a challenge, but truly called and well-equipped. The people in the pew deserve that.
Indeed they do, and thank God for these modalities of online.
Right,
HBU
absolutely.
Obviously is embraced, and you know, it makes it convenient. And secondly, the Houston Chronicle did this excoriating piece on sexual permissiveness among those who've not been censored, registered, and notified. And it gave traction across the country, as you know. The Catholic Church refers to internally the mass exodus.
Mm-hmm.
And according to one of their scholars that we filmed with, and it's literally that the Catholic churches in North America have emptied by the millions, particularly in New England and other places.
Right.
What's your position on the whole situation of, because, you know, we both know, I know of pastors who, when they had a bad staff member, they literally recommended them to someone to get them off their payroll. And it's a what's your position on that whole new start?
Well, it's tragic that anyone has ever been victimized by a minister. And we grieve over that. We are pained by that. And part of the reason we have the counseling ministry and the network we do. We don't want anyone out there who's been so tragically traumatized not to have the help and the assistance they need. So our first thought is we are deeply grieve for those who've been victimized. On the other hand, we are trying to take a proactive approach. And so we started about 3.5 years ago with partnering with an organization we call Ministry Safe. And it is it's a full-fledged training for the people in the church on how to make sure, first of all, our children are safe at church. I talked to a pastor yesterday, and he said, you know, when people come to my church now, they're not asking what do we believe or what do we offer. They want to know, are my kids safe? That's the first thing they want to know. And so we began that. We weren't ahead of the curve, but we felt like we were responding as quickly as anyone to that. And so that's continuing. And since the article in the Chronicle came out, we continue to offer these. We're expanding the offering of our Ministry Safe training, and our attendance is really going up. And we're, that part we're glad about. But I just would encourage every church, you know, do your homework. Mm-hmm. And every pastor and minister, you know, guard yourself. But then, you know, let's be honest with about who we know and what we know.
40% of the student population at HBU are Latino.
Right.
The state's changing. And, you know, I can see the day that we could have a bilingual website at HBU.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a blessing, but this multi-ethnicity, and I love it demonstrated
sure.
in Houston.
Right.
It was effectively demonstrated during Harvey.
Sure.
It was such a contrast to Charlottesville.
Yes.
In that you didn't sense this ethnicity, judgmental kind of discrimination at all. In fact, you saw the demonstration of it opposite. Our churches have to be ethnically integrated, and we have to embrace that, don't we?
Well, Houston really came together,
right?
Which, you know, we celebrated. The most to your point, last year in our traditional church starting model, we started about 65 churches. The most interesting piece to me about that was 23 of those new church plants in 2018 were intentionally multicultural and multi-ethnic.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a fresh intentionality to embrace our brothers and sisters. And I think that is only going to expand in the days going forward.
Well, long overdue. So great. We've been talking with Dr. David Hartage, the Executive Director of the Baptist General Convention of Texas. Dynamic leader for our state and obviously for HBU. You can learn more about it at texasbaptist.org. David, thank you for coming by. Thank you for sharing your thoughts.
It has thoroughly been my privilege. You're kind to have me, and thank you. Keep up the good work at HBU and beyond.
Thank you.
Here at HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.